Welcome to Life and LaVision. I'm your host, Brett Humphrey. In this episode, we'll hear about...
Wasn't a toga party gone wrong or whatever?
And this...
You get stuck in pop culture rabbit holes, I apologize. It happens to me a lot.
Maybe a little bit of this.
I think it's easier for people to assume technology covers the gaps. I haven't worked in a technology field, and I know we're not covering all the gaps.
So let's dive in and get going.
We're here at Studio Oct 9 in Virginia, hanging out. And let's go around the table and have folks introduce themselves.
Well, hey, Brett. I'm Eric Bridges. I'm the executive director of the American Council of the Blind and have known you for several years.
Yes.
Hi, everybody. I'm Tony Stevens. I'm the director of advocacy and governmental affairs for the American Council of the Blind.
I am Rebecca Bridges, and I am a volunteer for the American Council of the Blind and the boss's wife.
Yes. So you're the boss's boss.
She is the boss's boss, the creme de la creme.
You're telling me. Jeez.
That's awesome. Just 30 seconds on the show. The concept really is just to sit down and talk with folks who are low and no vision about their life in general. Good, bads, up and down. And we've done a few already with some friends and some of their family. And I've been looking for fun people that want to be involved. And so thank you all for taking the time out of your day and let me show up here and set up some mics and do some recording.
Well, it's our pleasure. It's nice to have you here and look forward to having some fun.
Awesome.
The towery cathedral of our main national office for the American Council of the Blind.
Well, they got me. I'm lucky that I knew people to get through the guard towers, and the dogs were friendly, though. They weren't attack dogs.
Yes, no, guide dogs mainly.
Yeah. So.
And displaced other emotional support animals.
Oh, don't talk about me like that. Let's just start with some basic background then. Whoever wants to dive in.
Okay. I'm not hearing volunteers, so I'm going to go. So I think a fun thing about growing up was my family. My family is a lot of fun. I'm the oldest of three kids. I've got two younger sisters and parents, mom and a dad that really have a great relationship with. And growing up in Iowa as a kid that was, you know, losing his sight, I grew up with the same expectations that my sisters had for how I was going to live my life, which also I guess is a great thing, but also not so much fun sometimes when you're a kid, you know.
So how many sisters do you have?
I've got two younger sisters. One is 4 years younger than me. She lives in Columbus, Ohio, and her name is Erin. And she's married, and they have a almost three-year-old son named Nate.
Awesome.
And my youngest sister, Allison, she's about 11 years younger than me, and she lives in Bettendorf, Iowa. And she's married.
I have no idea where that is.
It's in an area called the Quad Cities.
Oh, okay.
So there's, it straddles the Mississippi. So there's two towns on the Iowa side and two towns on the Illinois side. Very nice area.
I feel like I should know that because I grew up in southeastern South Dakota, but there you go.
It's in.
That's still quite a ways away from the Quad Cities.
I didn't know the Quad Cities until I met him.
It's the home of John Deere and the Rock Island Arsenal, which is a huge base.
Is Galena near there?
It's about an hour and a half away. Good call.
Galena, yeah.
Nice. So your sisters were both younger?
Yes.
So how was that growing up with them? And when did you lose your sight? I don't even know this story.
Sure. So, you know, it's interesting. I started losing my vision when I was about four. I was diagnosed with something called iritis, which is like the least creative, like, name of a diagnosis ever.
Yeah,
because it was due to arthritis, so they just named it EYE-ritis. It's basically, you know, the inflammation in my joints moved to my eyes, and it's pretty rare for kids to have that happen. And so for the period of about 13 years, from 4 till 17, I gradually lost my vision. You know, the inflammation in my eyes would come. It would wreak havoc with my retinas and corneas and all that fun stuff. And over that period of time, I gradually lost all the vision that I had. I was born with all my vision. So
how long was that? Over what time?
From 4 until I was 17. So basically till really the end of my junior year, started my senior year of high school, though you couldn't really tell, like anybody that can see you go, that's not vision, right? Like shadows and right. murky looking things. But yeah, that was me. And I grew up without really any other people to talk to that understood. Grew up with a kid that had star guards. He was a really kind of what you would call like a high partial, you know, he was kind of a,
so a high partial meaning
had a lot of vision, didn't need to use, you know, a cane. Yeah. I didn't have any, you know, I didn't have any peers, that, you know, I could for support system or anything. I had my parents were excellent advocates and they loved me, but I didn't have anybody that I could hang with, that I could understand.
Yeah. Similar for me. So
makes it rough. That. Yeah.
Do you make some good friends then? Did you have some friends that were helping you out?
I mean, I had like a small group of friends, yeah. And they were good when I was young. And then as we got into high school, they kind of dispersed.
Went that way.
And yeah, I was left at home on Friday nights, babysitting my sisters, watching TGIF. So that was me. I mean, I always say this, I was like a ball of awesomeness. I had braces, I had acne, and I was losing my vision. Other than that, things
life
were,
was great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I forgot about TGIF.
Yeah.
What were some of the shows? Was Alf one of those? What were some?
No,
of
that was NBC. Oh, gosh, so that's Full House.
Full House.
Family Matters.
Yeah.
Perfect Strangers.
Oh my gosh, I forgot about
Belky Bartokomus.
Yes.
Wow.
From MePost.
I get stuck in pop culture rabbit holes. I apologize. It happens to me a lot. So
yeah, Tony and his pop culture. Awesome.
Call it escapism.
How was then transition into college? What'd you do? How'd you manage that whole thing?
The cool thing was I viewed college as a way to start anew, like to be able to put my own stamp on that 4-year period. I got to be who I wanted to be instead of being somebody that the cliques thought of me as. That makes any sense. So I went and I went through Rush, you know, which is for the Greek system. You go and you visit all the fraternities and get the lay of the land, and then landed on a fraternity that I liked the group of guys. I liked sort of what they were trying to do. Their house had burned down 2 years ago, 2 years previously. Not their fault, by the way.
I was just going to ask. That sounds like a party.
An electrical fire. Yeah.
Hang with these guys.
Wasn't a toga
Your
party gone wrong
down.
Or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. I want to live with you guys.
Tiki torches and all of a sudden. No, yeah, it wasn't like that. It was fun. One of the really cool aspects of it was we got to build something from the bottom up, almost quite literally. It was a brand new house, beautiful house on campus. And membership had been waning because they didn't have a physical structure until like 6 months before I got there. And what we got to do was take the house from what had been not necessarily the most desirable group of guys you'd want to hang with and build it into something that we wanted it to be. And there were all sorts of challenges along the way because it's, you know, young guys from 19 to 22. But we got to focus on, you know, guys that wanted to get good grades but also wanted to have fun. And we developed sort of a type of guy that we wanted to be able to recruit. Had to get really good grades coming out of high school, which I had like okay grades coming out of high school.
Yeah, I'm always catch 22 on the good grades part.
Yeah, yeah, I was like okay on the ACT, okay grades wise, but I wasn't, you know, rocking the world or anything. Again, I mean, we were not perfect by any stretch of the imagination, and so in life doesn't ever go in a straight line. We recruited some guys that didn't wind up working out, and guys that decided to drink their way through the first couple of semesters and drank their way right out of school, you know, or what have you. That stuff happens. But overall, we were able to build something that was so cool that by the end, you know, when I graduated, we were in consideration to be the best chapter in all of our national fraternity in Phi Kappa Psi, which is a major national fraternity. So it was neat. I got to be part of it. I got to be in the leadership. And it was where I first learned how to be a leader of a group of people at times, and also how to advocate on my own behalf with the university. So there's a lot of lessons learned in the 4+ years I was at the University of Iowa.
Awesome. Do you still keep in contact with a bunch of the friends from there?
I do. Actually, a lot more of them than I do my high school friends.
What you're saying is we got to go do a podcast with them so we can hear the stories.
I think you would have a very I think you would have a very good time.
Yeah, good. Good. I always like to talk about at least one low point. That's not the phrase I'm looking for, but where you had to work through a challenge and all of that, because you made that sound like, yeah, I went to college and we did awesome stuff, which is all true, but I suspect there were some, you know, you spoke a bit about, I think casually, that you had to learn a bit more how to advocate for yourself and be a leader, and some, I suspect there's some challenges in that.
Yeah. Well, I had to learn what my rights were. My parents were the very best advocates that I had growing up, and I'm so thankful for that. But once I got to college, I learned that there were two Braille printers on the whole campus of 35,000 students, and they were both 15 to 20 years old, not reliable, and I didn't have unfettered access to them because one of them was at the education school and the other one was at the nursing school of all places, right? So I was like, what? What do we? Okay, so how do I get stuff brailled out? How do I get my materials in an expedient way so that I'm not behind in class? That became a real challenge. And so trying to work with my professors ahead of time to get the syllabi so that I could then reach out to whoever I needed to reach out to get the materials, because sometimes it was like, you know, it's like trying to find, you know, publications in Sanskrit, you know, it's like,
yeah,
this thing was published 48 years ago, you know, and it's because the professor actually wrote it that we need to read it.
Oh, no.
But no one's ever read it on the tape or brailled it, you know? And so figuring out how to work with them, but then also ultimately I had to advocate for myself with the university, with the administration, and say, look, this isn't right. I shouldn't have to constantly be on the professors, or frankly, on the disability student services, which sometimes would just completely let me down in terms of getting, you know, certain handouts brailled in a timely fashion or what have you. And so I wound up having to go through affirmative action, having to go to the dean of students. It was not a real pleasant time, in particular the first 2 years that I was at Iowa for the class stuff.
Yeah. Do you think that's still true today for people?
Oh, yes. I do. I think that some of that has been mitigated by technology and the advancements in technology. You look at stuff like Bookshare and you know, ebooks and other aspects of technology that have come so far over the last 20 years, but there's still the need for blind students to continue to advocate, to get their materials in a timely fashion, because there still are print handouts. There still are visual based aspects of learning that are just not very easy, or professors don't think about their blind or visually impaired students.
The reason I asked is that I think your comment about technology helps. My concern is that I think there's still a...
It's both.
Yeah, thank you. That's a great phrase. Because there's so much great technology, I think it's easier for people to assume technology covers the gaps.
Right.
And I don't think it does. I mean, I happen to work in a technology field, and I know we're not covering all the gaps.
Right.
And nor is anybody right now. I was talking on a different podcast, you know, where you were talking about you had to advocate with your professors, and you end up having to teach people how to work with you and what you need, and that takes a lot of effort. And
yep. Every semester.
Yeah, and I think it wears on people after a while.
It does.
Actually. But you graduated with your degree in what?
Journalism and mass communications.
Awesome.
Yeah, I wanted to be
a sports anchor. I wanted to be on SportsCenter.
Go Hawks.
Thank you. Go Hawks indeed. And then I watched a couple of my buddies graduate ahead of me and go make like 14 grand doing weekend sports anchoring in like, I don't know, Butte or somewhere, right? And it was like, because that's where everybody gets their start. You know, that's small true. Market
yeah.
on the weekend. It's like, whoa, I don't know. And I don't think broadcasting was ready for a blind guy, probably. Yeah, that's what I wanted to do. I got the opportunity to interview a lot of sports figures at the University of Iowa through my, you know, my J school period, and you know, it was really cool, and it's still a passion of mine today.
So. Awesome.
You don't try to call Eric during March Madness.
I actually take a day off, either that Thursday or Friday.
And there's no emergency happens in the office. We have to call him.
So you graduated, wanted to do sports, and now I'm sitting here at the table with you being the executive vice president, president. I'm horrible
and
titles.
The executive director.
Executive director. Great. Yeah. I just knew he was Eric the cool guy.
I'll take that.
You know, that's also an interesting shift. Like, how'd you end up from, you know, thinking about weekend, you know, sports casting and interviewing folks to where you're today? Because it's a unique role that you serve.
Yeah, it's quite a departure. Yeah. So I think I needed to get a job, number one, because I wasn't going to go home and live with my parents. I was, that was quite evident. I was not going to be living at home.
By you.
By them.
Yeah, good.
Yeah. So.
But sorry, and I say that because I've talked to a lot of students and parents and they're like, oh, I want my kid to stay at home. And I'm like, actually, you probably want your child to go out and learn how to be self-sufficient, because at some point that doesn't necessarily match, right? It's mm-hmm. hard for someone to stay at home and then learn how to do that later in life than sooner. So right. I applaud your parents. My parents were the same. 18? Yeah, you know where the door is. You're out.
That's right. Yeah. So I needed to get a job, and I'd had the opportunity to do a congressional internship before my last semester of college out here in DC, and I fell in love with DC. And I was working for...
There's a rare one for you. Sorry, I'm sure people say I fell in love with DC, but that's awesome.
Yeah, yeah. So I DC is cool for a young person. Lots of young people. You know, the summer internship programs are pretty great. And so I worked for Senator Tom Harkin, kind of the father of the ADA, and he showed me around. It was like the 10th anniversary of the ADA, so I sort of became his default poster boy for the ADA. So I got to go do all kinds of cool things that my fellow interns didn't get to do. They got to open mail. And by the way, did you know that back then, in like the summer of 2000, every Senate office got a monthly copy of Hustler?
No.
Yeah.
No.
Like complimentary from the publishers, yes, I guess.
From Larry Flint.
Larry Flint versus Larry the people. Flint.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. And so, yeah, it was always sort of interesting watching that exchange happen when the mail was open. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because he kept it classy.
They gave that to Eric. So he had to open that.
Exactly. But yeah. So I got to meet President Clinton. There's a 10th anniversary celebration at the FDR Memorial, which I think was pretty much brand new then. And Clinton and Senator Kennedy and Senator Harkin all spoke, and I got to hang out on the rope line. It was a neat summer for me. And it was also interesting because I, even back then, I did not consider myself to be a Democrat. I considered myself to be a Republican. And so learning, you know, for a summer about the other side, learning, you know, what the Democrat Party's views were on certain aspects of policy as it pertained to disability policy and other things was great, because I wasn't steeped in any of that stuff in disability policy. I was just a dude going to college, right? So trying to get a journalism degree. So I wasn't, you know, taking social justice or whatever courses. I was just living the life of a blind guy. And so I learned a ton. And I tell you what, I have a great deal of respect for Senator Harkin.
and what he did. And, you know, while I don't necessarily agree with, you know, a lot of his other stances, his work on the ADA was incredible.
Awesome. So you never know where you're going to go from TGIF.
No, you do not.
To,
yeah, you know, and I got,
in a, you know, I'm sure you had your share of a beverage in college. And then,
allegedly.
Yeah, allegedly. Yeah. But, and then, you know, working your way through to where you're today, it's just, that's awesome. So,
yeah, I don't know. It's just life, right? I mean, I came out here, got a job, had a fellowship through the Brookings Institution at one point, worked on Capitol Hill for a member, and then came to work here when there was a job opening, and been here 11 years.
Thank you for joining us for this episode. In the next episode, we'll talk about...
I wasn't prepared for the shenanigans.
And this?
Inside, I'd be on my bike, boom, right into like a fire hydrant, go flying.
And a little bit more of this.
The schools were not equipped. They're like, oh, we got this math book in Braille, and it's the honors math, so just take that class, okay?
Audio engineering is done by Brett Humphrey. Audio production is done by Cody Kilpatrick. This episode is copyright 2018, all rights reserved.